Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning appointment with the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Doctor, good to be with you again. There's a lot of talk about the new Alzheimer's drug, but is anybody going to be able to afford this thing?
Well, Bob, if we had to pay out of pocket, you would certainly have to have substantial funds to do this. But because people probably have seen that the cost of this drug is going to be north of $25,000. So certainly, if we were set to say, hey, this comes out of pocket, we wouldn't be using it. So what happened is Medicare said, hey, you know what, we're going to pay for this drug as long as it gets fully approved and as long as all the patients who are on it are in a registry, which means that they're going to be collecting information as far as how well is it working, side effects, you know, and is it working properly, which is good because if we didn't do it, if the FDA didn't step up or Medicare didn't step up to say we're going to pay for it, very few people would use it. With very few people using it, we won't know the success rate of it, which won't advance the science of, boy, that we're going down the right road. So people are probably saying, wow, this is going to be such a huge expense to Medicare. But I look at it and say it's our opportunity to prove that the drug is really working well and will advance the other 5, 6, 7 drugs that are in the pipeline right now that are doing similar things to remove that beta amyloid from the brain.
And do we have a timetable for this that that probably will hold fast?
Well, you know, you can see it now. You'll start to see a lot more advertisement on it, certainly in the next few weeks here, if not even as, you know, early as this week. So certainly the timetable is going to be probably more long-term as far as the effects of it. This is not like an antibiotic where you take it and your Alzheimer's is gone. This is going to be one that's going to slow the progression of this disease and potentially show some improvement. So that's why we're doing the registry, to track that and to track how well it works. But, you know, this is a drug that probably, when you look at the 6.5 million people with Alzheimer's, it's going to come down to a classification of probably between 1 to 2 million individuals will be available or will be allowed to do it, because we're looking at those with the early stages of Alzheimer's and, you know, the minor symptoms, to see if we can stop it in its tracks.
This would be a good day to remind people, especially out in the Wheaton area, about this concert to benefit the Alzheimer's Association. The country star, a lot of people saw on The Voice, Jay Allen, and hopefully he will raise some money Saturday night, won't he?
Yeah, we really hope he does. You know, it's a very interesting story. Jay Allen lost his mother to Alzheimer's. We had one of the hospital presidents here, Mike Vivoda. He lost his wife to early onset Alzheimer's. And Mike's son, David Vivoda, the local realtor out here, befriended Jay and said, hey, you know what? This impacted me like it impacted you. How about if we put on a concert? Jay Allen has raised $100 million for Alzheimer's research. So David and Jay got together and said, hey, let's do a local concert here. And it's going to happen in Wheaton out here at the Memorial Park in Wheaton. You can go online to the website for Wheaton Park District and buy tickets, and really hope to have a lot of good people out there. We have an opening band called Vital Signs, which has a bunch of doctors in it, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then we have Jay Allen after that. And, you know, kudos to David Vivoda and Jay for stepping up and showing the impact this disease made on their mother, and how we can stop it in its tracks now. So very good timing.
We'll post all the information on our website too, WGNRadio.com. That's Saturday night, Memorial Park in Wheaton, for the Jay Allen concert to benefit the Alzheimer's Association. There's always some interesting news about aspirin. Let's talk about this for a second. Is anemia now a side effect of taking too much aspirin? Is this something we didn't know about before? What's new here?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We knew that aspirin can cause bleeding in the stomach, and that's why, if you remember, probably a couple of years ago, a lot of people were on aspirin. They were on aspirin because AFib. They were on aspirin because of the chance to decrease their stroke or decrease the chance of heart attack. And then we started to say, wait a second, there's this increased chance of bleeding. So we took a lot of people off aspirin. However, there's still a lot of individuals over the age of 60 who continue to take it. So then what we looked at is saying, wait, of these individuals who are taking it, how is it affecting their blood, the amount of blood that's circulating in their hemoglobin? And when you get anemic, what happens as we age, we don't produce as many blood cells. So we don't produce them as effectively, I should say, or as efficiently as we used to. So what this study did is they looked and they said 18,000 people, they looked at half of the people were taking aspirin, half of them weren't. And those that were taking aspirin were 25% more likely to be anemic. And you're like, well, who cares? What does that really mean? But we really need to understand that anemia is impactful in many parts of our body. It brings oxygen, it brings glucose, it brings many nutrients to the blood, to the body that we need. So really now we really are starting to look again at aspirin being in the scrutiny now of, boy, should we be taking it over this certain age? And we need to understand the risk and reward of, okay, it's going to prevent a stroke, it's going to prevent a heart attack potentially, but now it's also going to cause anemia, so we need to make sure we balance that to make sure the right people are taking it.
Talking with Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. A number of our listeners brought this question up, and I wonder about it too. We're talking about aspirin. What's the current recommendation regarding taking a low-dose aspirin daily to prevent a heart attack?
Yeah, it's a question that a lot of people are having now, especially with all the new information that's coming out. So, you know, the low-dose aspirin, just like a baby aspirin, essentially, is what we used to just tell people. And now they have enteric-coated low-dose aspirin so that it can get through the stomach without causing bleeding in many people. I would speak to your doctor. I currently take a baby aspirin a day. Why? Because I have high risk. My father died of a heart attack. I have high cholesterol, so I have high blood pressure. So certainly I kind of fall into that. But you would probably want to talk to your doctor to make sure that the risk reward is there. And then if you do, I would say try to make sure you take an enteric-coated one so that it decreases, this decreases the chance of it causing any bleeding in the stomach.
And this is interesting. I was reading about a possible link between taking aspirin and a decreased risk of colon cancer. What's the latest on this?
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, this is something that we all thought about before, saying, is there this link? And there was a study done a long time ago that kind of looked at it and said, you know, aspirin is an anti-inflammatory, inflammation in the intestine. Does that lead towards colon cancer? And there certainly was that softer kind of link, but never really a great study. And then now the study that just came out that you're talking about is also not a great study because it only looked at women, which is unfortunate, but it was a large group of women. It looked at 32,000 women who had a colonoscopy before the age of 50. And what they showed is they showed that those individuals who were taking aspirin on a regular basis had a big decreased risk in colon cancer. So especially the early onset colon cancer is what this study showed. Now, again, we kind of jump ahead. It's not a great study because you look at just at this population, so you can't take it through across all ages, across all sexes, across all nationalities. So certainly something that has gotten everybody's attention and will probably be now looked at much more closely.
What's the current recommendation as far as when someone should be screened for colon cancer and get a colonoscopy?
Yeah, you know, we've looked and we have seen, and we've talked about this in the past, you know, that the increase of colon cancer happening prior to the age of 50, unfortunately, is going up quite a bit. So when we looked at that, it used to be the age of 50. And if you had a high risk of it, okay, then we would start you at age 40. But what we have done is we've now looked to see how many early cases are being found at that early screening at age 50, and now the recommendation has moved down to 45. So now, 45 years old, you're on the docket for your first colonoscopy. And like I said, people should really look at this and say, hey, you know, I know it's not a favorite thing, it's not comfortable, the prep is not so much fun, but certainly catching that cancer earlier is going to make a big difference. And there is a new prep out that actually tastes good, more like a sports drink, not a lot of volume. So you'll be hearing more about that to make sure that the prep is a lot easier than what it's been in the past where you've had to drink large volumes of a liquid to to prepare yourself for the test.
Here's an interesting question from our text line. Please ask Dr. Most, what is the best criteria when selecting an orthopedic surgeon for hip replacement? Where do you go to get accurate information about success rate and patient satisfaction? And that's such a common procedure now, isn't it?
It really is. Amazing how many, and just the tip of the iceberg. You know, we get to all these baby boomers now that are really kind of hitting the sweet spot for hip and knee replacements. And it is a great question we're asked all the time, because how do you pick a doctor? If you look at orthopedic surgery in the past, orthopedists used to do, well, I was an orthopedist. I would do ankles, I would do knees, I would do hips, I would do shoulders. What we've seen now is that joint replacement has really pushed subspecialization. So what I would do is ask your orthopedic surgeon, how many have you done? How many have you done in the last month? And when did you start doing these? Those are the three key questions. You want someone that their focus is only on joint replacements. You don't want someone that says, oh, I did, you know, three last week. No, you want the guy that said, I did 20 last week. So the key is, the more times you do a surgery, the better you get at it. Now, as far as patient satisfaction, certainly there's RateMD, there's HealthGrades, there's OpenMD, all of those online. I would also say go to the major health systems. If you go to nm.org, you can look up any doctor and you can look at their survey results. They're posted there, their star rating, as well as any comments about the physician. And we're very careful to make sure that we're fair, to put the comments up that the patients actually said. So they're validated patients that actually made these comments. So really a great question, and going to happen more and more and more.
Great advice, as always, from Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most. And just to clarify here, you don't take aspirin every day because of the stress of talking to me every week, right?
No. I take other things for that.
Talk to you next Monday. Thanks.
You got it.